and the changing isn't free. You've read it in the tea leaves and the cracks are on TV. Beware the Savage Show, 1984. They'll spit your pretty cranium and fill it full of air and tell you that you're made
there. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. I'd like to remind everyone RBN is listener supported. Please donate what you can, folks, and remember, free speech cannot exist without being funded by we, the people. And there are many ways you can do that. You could use PayPal right on the RBN website donate page. You could call our RBN staff to donate via credit or debit card. Call in to donate at 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or you could always mail in that donation, cash, check, money order, payable to RBN. Mailing address 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And we greatly appreciate it, folks. Please help ensure that RBN continues broadcasting uncensored content well into the future. And I have on with me today a new regular co-host for the moment. We have Paul in California back with us, and looks like he'll be a Tuesday co-host for the upcoming future. Hey, good day, Paul. Well, I should say good morning for you over on the West Coast there.
Thank you, Richard, for having me on again. Yeah, it's 10 a.m. here on the West Coast. Time to wake up and get the coffee.
Sounds good. Sounds good indeed. And we were talking a bit, debating before the show, but you know, a lot of people, even in these communities, RBN listener community, even, I mean, when you talk about race, I mean, there's always a concern, and a lot of people have held, you know, views that, you know, well, yeah, it can be very divisive, and also what our enemies in power and government agencies are looking to use against us, you know, just waiting to, and of course, but the divisive aspect as well. I'd say it's already being used in a divisive way, a weaponized way, against whites. You know, everything out there is, I mean, it clearly is a war on us. And there is no exaggeration. You know, when I first heard the term white genocide, I had trouble being able to use it myself. Or, I mean, it just seemed like an exaggeration or something, other than what you hear about in South Africa. But no, I mean, it's no exaggeration. And it starts with the culture, you know, and that enables something more literal in the future. So I think it's important to be able to talk about these things since we are already under attack. It already has been divisive and it against us. So this is really us really just trying to survive. I want to play this whole clip, I think, Paul, so that people can understand further perhaps why we want, and I want the listeners to hear your perspectives on the topic of, well, racial realism, if you will. What would you say as an intro before we play this clip?
Hang on one second, Richard. I'm grabbing. Thank you. I'm actually going to the drive-thru right now, getting a coffee, and I'm done. Forget it. Well, it's just another one of many hundreds of such things I've come across the last few years. And, you know, there's a whole, for people that don't want to look or that haven't looked, you know, there's a whole, what I would call, string of wake-up calls that we need to start thinking of and be aware of. Because, you know, sooner or later, it's going to be in your face wherever you are. I mean, the only, you know, people that are going to be immune from this tidal wave of basically browns and blacks and orientals that is engineered to come your way are those people that live like high on a mountaintop somewhere. Because it's occurring everywhere. And it's something that, you know, you have to ask yourself a couple of questions. One, do we want it to continue? And two, if we don't, then what is it we need to prevent it or stop it and or reverse it? And the answer to the first question is pretty easy. We never wanted it in the first place. So, but anyway, go ahead and play whatever amount of that clip you want, because the audio in it is quite impressive. The video adds a little to it, but I think the audio will be sufficient.
I agree, and there's going to be one point where you'll hear in French from the French president, and I'll just speak over him to translate for you folks, because I did a screenshot. My French isn't that fresh from high school and college, but... Okay, so please, we have Mike in the control room today. Thank you, Mr. Slatichek. If you would please play clip one for the listeners. And again, folks, I should, I don't know if I mentioned the first time, really, the name of the clip is White Man, Get Off Your Knees. Actually, it's White Man, Get Off Your Effing Knees. But it has actually been censored, fortunately, by whoever put it up. And it just shows how much it's anti-white in the culture and in the corporate media. If you would please, Mike.
And you stop it. You are a white male. Stop it. You are a white male. Your skin is light enough. Stop it.
You're a white woman with blonde hair.
Yeah?
That's right. You are racist.
You're a fucking white male. You're a white man.
Right. Well, nobody has to save you because you're a fucking white man who gets to do whatever he wants to in this space, right? You don't have a fucking culture.
I don't?
No, you don't.
Oh.
We're white. We don't have a goddamn
are you? I sit here as a privileged white woman. I cannot imagine, but I appreciate you educating us.
Well, because we're white, we have had privilege, even the poorest of us.
When you're white, you don't know what it's like to be living in a ghetto. You don't know what it's like to be poor. You don't know what it's like to be hassled when you walk down the street. Or you get dragged out of a car.
What do you say to the people who dragged a poor white guy out of a car and beat him?
Oh my goodness, poor white people, please, stop. Stop it, Carl.
Those white guys, those middle-aged, boring, nerdy-looking white guys.
Yeah, I don't even know what diversity means, but whatever. Thank
it
you.
It means non-white men.
What do you mean we're lucky to be white?
It's not luck, it's privilege.
We're privileged, and that's unfair.
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country. We should be profiling, monitoring, and creating policies to fight the radicalization of white men.
So we have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right, and we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that?
All right, hold up. Is everybody?
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we murder more white people? Take one.
I think we don't murder more white people because it's very dangerous to do so.
I'm angry at white people most of the time. Most of the time.
Like, white power is Trump Tower. Like, these things are put against each other, but when we say we want to kill whitey, we don't really mean we want to kill whitey, we do. But when we say we want to kill whitey, it's like a capitalist. Not today.
If white people want to see an improvement for people of color, they need to understand that racism is not learned, it's inherited, and either consciously or unconsciously passed down through privilege. The uncomfortable truth is that the white race is the most violent and oppressive force of nature on Earth.
I saw a thing in that said a lot of men, white men, were committing suicide. And I almost said, yeah, great. And then I thought about it a little more, and I thought, well, maybe you shouldn't say that in public.
White Americans will soon be a minority, and that's great.
You know, whites will not be the majority. I mean, it's an exciting transformation of the country. It's an exciting evolution and, you know, progress of our country in many different ways. Clearly, there's, you know, among white supremacists, white nationalists, that is viewed as a horrific event.
It's a kind of utopia. Just the fact that the whole world will mix up with each other, that in, I don't know, 70, 80 years, there will be no white people anymore, and only cappuccino colored people.
Look, look, that's the only way. That's, this is the only solution. It's my,
yeah,
my way of
yeah, mix up.
It's our only hope. It's our way out of this.
Yes.
It's going to take some time.
That we're witnessing the end of white America as we know it. The question is, how long and how expensive will the funeral be?
It means recognizing that there is one common enemy, the white man. We need to address the fact that, you know, all of these groups of people, the issues they face, it all comes from the same people, white men. So we need to get rid of them.
What I did wrong in 2016 is I overestimated white people.
And white people have been probably woefully late to this conversation.
But I'm not willing to let white voters off the hook.
The sweeping vistas stir the soul. Wildlife and waterfalls awaken a sense of wonder. The American wilderness, a playground for old and for young, and overwhelmingly white. The National Park Service says the persistent whiteness of its 419 parks is an existential crisis.
It is not the job of black people and ethnic minorities to educate white people on racism that is perpetrated by white people. Right. White folks need to go educate themselves on the racism they perpetrate. White privilege whitewashes racist and inflammatory language as unconscious bias. It perpetuates the bigotry of intolerant white people as ignorant.
It's very hard to talk about the issue of race. White people particularly don't know how to do it.
Well, I call it white mansplaining.
This idea that white people are objective on racism, which is outrageous. We are the least objective.
The most dangerous kind of white privilege is to think that we can sit this justice struggle
out. Of course,
out.
That woman
in London,
was
the white
Jew,
British population
folks,
has decreased
assuming
by
yourself
600,000, while the minority population has increased by 1.2 million. So, yes, lads, we're winning.
Do you believe that that white folks actually care about racial injustice?
It doesn't appear that we do. I mean, the status quo of our society is racism, and it's comfortable for white people.
Doesn't it seem like some white men are really angry lately? Which is why you're getting pushback from the men in your life for just existing. But it's not you. It's white men. They're a little fragile right now.
There are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
Look, that was Oprah.
Ça va faire parler.
And now we have French President Nicolas Sarkozy. He says, the challenge of racial interbreeding that faces us in the 21st century, it's not a choice. It's an obligation. It's imperative. We cannot do otherwise. If this volunteerism does not work for the Republic, then the state will move to still more coercive measures.
My concern is doing away with whiteness. Whiteness is a form of racial oppression, sure. The suggestion is that it is somehow possible to separate whiteness from oppression, and it is not. There can be no white race without the phenomenon of white supremacy. If you abolish slavery, you abolish slaveholders. In the same way, if you abolish racial oppression, you do away with whiteness. Treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity.
Your views are fairly well received in academia.
Yes, they're legitimate, not to say that everyone agrees.
It is incumbent upon people who hold the power in this society to help to do that, to do the heavy lifting. And guess who that is? Who is that, Chris?
White people.
A lot of the real craziness comes, if you like, from rural white Americans who feel that they're losing their country, they're losing ownership of the country. And they're right. I mean, we are becoming more diverse, more multicultural, and they are, in the end, they are not the future. In the end, the power they still have will go away.
The reason why I helped write the standards and the reason why I am here today is that as a white male in society, I'm given a lot of privilege that I didn't earn.
Critical for white people, for people in general, to stop denying their racist ideas.
It's sinful. It is a sinful, violent identity construct and culture because, first of all, whiteness emerges as a construct always in opposition to that which is not white. That's the way it emerges. You cannot at once be white and Christian. And that means you have to name the ways, you have to call out the demon. You have to name the ways in which you are white. So you have to name the demons.
What am I trying to do in my classrooms? I'm trying to create dangerous spaces within my classrooms. Dangerous spaces. And what does this mean? What we need are critical dangerous spaces where vulnerability, so I'm thinking these are dangerous spaces, where vulnerability and anxiety can be nurtured in white students who find themselves faced with critical questions about race that mark their bodies as problem bodies. How do you mark white bodies as problem bodies and get away with that? Creating moments of trauma are important. Again, etymologically, which means to wound, within the context of classrooms. How do you create trauma? We need forms of trauma that unsettle various meta-narratives that ground and underwrite white privilege and white so-called superiority. This is necessary for white students in order to begin to disarticulate, again, various mythopoetic constructions of whiteness that have reinforced their naturalized place of dominance in the world.
Okay, and now from Paul in California, I'd like to hear your comment here. You're the one who first shared the clip with me, and of course, you've been exposed to these examples of this far longer than myself with your research, sir.
Yes, so lovely, right? Lovely thought, the way these people look at us and think about us. They're so grateful that we have this country that they want to come to and live in. Right, when I think about these people, and I'm going to use some pejoratives here, and I think they're within the, I think they're out of the bounds of the normal, shall we say, profanity that would not be kosher here on RBN. But I think about these whiny faggots, right, and I laugh and I mock them, okay, because there's no doubt in my mind about who I am and what I think, and I've never been coy. I've never been ashamed. I've never felt any sense of guilt about what it is we have accomplished as a race. Well, we came to this continent to basically clear the land and build settlements and farms, right? It was very sparsely populated by various Indian tribes, and many of them were quite hostile. And anybody that has not looked into the Indian Wars and read about the kind of things that the pioneers experienced and saw firsthand, they truly were savages. Their means of making war and waging war were horrific to the European conscience. So, you know, that being said, you look today what we have created, a modern advanced society with infrastructure, roads, bridges, schools, hospitals, well, factories. We used to have factories until they got offshored to various other, you know, cheaper labor destinations. But these are all things that these third world non-whites desire. Otherwise, they wouldn't be coming here. In fact, right now, as I'm sitting in my car in the parking lot, I'm looking at three very obese black women walking out of the grocery store. Each one of them is probably at least 40 to 60 pounds overweight minimum. We've all seen the type. So all our minorities here, if you've seen enough YouTube videos and other video platforms and in person, all our minorities here are quite well fed, okay? You know, the old adage about the fat Mexican, well, that's real. Believe me, I can testify to it here in California, okay? At least 60 and probably 70% or more Mexicans I see are fat. So they're doing quite well here. So for any minority from any other country to complain about their perceived treatment here is a joke, in my opinion, okay? If they don't like it, they can go somewhere else, right? They don't have to be here. The fact of the matter is they want to come here, and why is that? Well, because historically, the white male is the MVP of the human race. That's, for all of you out there that don't know the term from sports, most valuable player. There's no doubt about it in terms of what we have invented and what we can build. No other group, no other individual player on the world stage comes even close to the white man. So I have white privilege in my coffee every morning. It's delicious. I love it. So that's my initial reaction. hope everybody liked it.
Yes. And I mean, that had such a variety in that clip, of course. You know, you'll have Jews pretending to be white, like that that female book author. You'll have blacks, and you'll have, various Asian Pacific Islanders or Hispanics in it. And then you'll also see a large amount of these anti-white whites, including, some from the LGBT community, who you can see why they chose the path of just being anti-man and anti-white, even though they are white and they really should be doing their best to attract a man and do what they can for a productive family. But you have every type in there. You know, there was the one guy from the Democratic Party, you know, he was saying, oh, well, you know, it's probably good if a lot of white men are committing suicide. He is a white man, but, you know, he's taught that is.
Mm-hmm. No. It's important. The audio came off quite well. I was quite impressed. And as I texted you, I said that I thought the audio portion, just on its own, said what needed to be said and came across quite well. In many cases, that does hold true with videos. Other times, it's important to see the images. But in my opinion, it was not that important to see all the faces. A lot of them were Jewish. But yeah, there's plenty of white race traitors. And in my opinion, and we've discussed this privately too, I don't hold any individual lower on the contempt scale than fellow whites who are not on board with white racial solidarity. I'll put it that way. That's a mild way of putting it. I can't stand whites that actually empathize with or feel sorry for minorities for some perceived slights, because the fact of the matter is, it's almost to a man or a woman, every single black, every single Asian, every single Mexican that you see in this country, that you've seen throughout your entire life, has never been a victim of a white criminal. Okay? I can practically guarantee it. I would imagine the percentages are approaching 98 or 99%. Okay? I have black friends that have told me that they never really had any problem with whites when they were growing up. Right? That all their problems were with other blacks and or Mexicans. Okay? I've had, like I said, a couple of black friends that are pretty much, shall we say, white nationalists in their way of thinking, because they see the tidal wave of immigration and they know firsthand how racist a lot of these Latinos and Mexicans really are. And it's a laugh, because as I've discussed with you, Richard, genetically phenotype speaking, the average Mexican, from multiple studies, the average Mexican has over 30% black DNA. A lot of people don't know this.
But they still hate the blacks. They still hate the blacks, and the more they are a majority over the black minority in this country, the blacks aren't going to do much better than the whites, regardless of what the Jews intervene. When you get enough Hispanics, the blacks aren't going to do well in this nation. That's for sure as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and there's a number of reasons, but of course, blacks, as you know, can be very physical and very aggressive, and so that's an obvious reason to dislike them. And plus, they know where their bread is buttered. And they like white people because white people pay them and employ them. And look, I was, as I've discussed with you, I was in the gardening and landscaping business for over 30 years, you know, self-employed. I used a lot of Hispanic labor. I make no bones about it. And because it was there, it was available, and in most cases, it was quite productive to do so. And there's a lot of really good people, a lot of sweet people. But that's a separate anecdotal way to look at it. The bottom line is, most of them should not be here. And if they weren't here, then that work would be available to be done at a higher wage by all the people that are already here. And then it has historically been done. This idea that we can't get along without, Mexican or Latino labor is absurd. I mean, all you have to do is look at pictures from the early 1900s and even late 1800s, and you see who did all the work. It was poor white.
And we get a lot of phone. And, of course, to these kind of discussions, you'll get a lot of phone calls, which are really trying to illustrate the exception to the rule. And by that alone, say that we shouldn't bother with mentioning these statistics or the incompatibility in the long term culture-wise and just like coexisting in the same neighborhoods, you know, and on the same blocks.
It, 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 And it's very simple, too. It all comes down to numbers. So, again, nobody, I think, unless you're in a very isolated part of a very isolated, shall we say, less than desirable state, you're going to be getting overwhelmed about now. California has been overwhelmed for 15 to 20 years minimum. Okay, we are experiencing a tidal wave to the point where in my neighborhood, which used to be exclusively white, and the high school that I went to was almost exclusively white, you now, it's a rare occasion to see a white person out in public in a workplace. It's not an exaggeration that I'm saying. It's a fairly large metropolitan area in the South San Francisco Bay Area, and literally there are so many non-whites from everywhere, it's staggering.
And I want to remind,
they're pushing.
And I want to remind the listeners, especially those who may disagree with us at this point, we have another clip to play after the bottom of the hour break and to discuss further. Just to put that in perspective of all that's being discussed here. But, well, we have, what, about 3 minutes left, Paul? The mic is yours.
Okay, well, like I said, it comes to a point where you have to start doing the math. And I did the math back in the 90s when I saw what was happening here. I knew that at the time China had over a billion people. They say now it's 1.3 billion. I don't know. Who knows? All I know is there's plenty of them, and they can stay there. India now has over a billion people, they say. We are getting deluged with Indians and Chinese. Every single house on my street the last 10 years, the only white person that bought a house on my street in the real estate turnover was a white man married to a Chinese woman. Other than that, every single house on my street has sold to a non-white foreigner, either Indian or Chinese. And yes, they don't keep up their lawns. In many cases, they're brown and they let the weeds grow. Okay, this is a fact. I was in the business. I know what they do to neighborhoods. Okay, just like when you go to Mexican neighborhoods, what do they look like? They're full of trash. Okay,
weeds. And that's a good point as well. I mean, I have been in Chicago my whole life for 45 years before just now moving. You have been most of your life in the San Francisco area. These are like canaries in the coal mine, cities like this I was mentioning earlier to you. Most people don't get the perspective how much has already, and it's the canary in the coal mine for the rest of the nation. Go ahead.
And the lie of the Jew media is that it's culture or it's poverty. No, it's innate. It's biology. And in the end, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a biological war for territory. That's the only way that we really should look at it, because that's what it is. Okay, Mexico and Latin America are spilling out and basically putting their populations here, and they're spawning. The Chinese are spilling out, going to Canada, going to Central and South America, going to the U.S. and spawning. The same with the Indians. I'm going to use a crude term because I like it. They're spawning. That's all this is, and we don't want it. I don't want it. So you can call me any name you want. I am proud to be a Nazi white supremacist, white nationalist. I couldn't be happier about it. And I don't think that any white person worth his salt that has two brain cells to rub together should go down that road, okay, and start to embrace it. Otherwise, we're going to be screwed over on purpose by a Jewish alien enemy that is engineering this.
And that really needed to be said. I mean, we are so under siege. And I wanted to comment on how we're not supposed to have a culture. The people at the beginning screaming, we're LGBT whites, screaming whites don't have a culture. I'm going to touch on that before the next audio clip. Stick around, folks, and we will be back. Check out these messages from our sponsors.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, And every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Let's talk vaccine mandates, shall we? I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. Dr. Birx has admitted something that many of us were shunned and censored for saying just a few months ago. The COVID vaccine was never going to stop the transmission of the virus. With Biden and other high-profile people getting jabbed and still getting COVID, then getting COVID again, the stop the spread argument should be entirely off the table. The mRNA jab may very well keep you from getting deathly sick. And if that's true, that makes it more akin to a tetanus shot. It keeps you from getting a potentially deadly infection, but it doesn't protect anyone else at all. When was the last time an employer required you to get a tetanus shot or be fired? Please demand transparency from Congress by demanding a vote on H.R. 46. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/HR46 for more information. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
And we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative. Republic Broadcasting, Richard Carey here with my returning regular co-host. He was Wednesdays, now he's Tuesdays, back, Paul in California. And yeah, that's another tidbit I wanted to mention before the next audio clip. Those ones screaming, Paul, at the start of the first clip, I should let the listeners know, it was generally white LGBT activists out at rallies, saying, whites, you're crazy, you're a white man, you don't have a culture, you know, you're a white woman, how could you dare say you have any rights about or say about any of the changes, basically, you know, you don't have a culture, they're also screaming, because you're white. And these are whites that are conditioned toward that, and they are so angry. They have been so hardcore conditioned, Paul.
So just quickly, I'll interject. So from my personal life, I can testify that these people exist. And so since my subset of contact with humanity is relatively small, just as all of ours is, right? In other words, in the broader population, you know, we interact with a fairly small number. But yeah, I've known many whites that are extremely anti-racist, so to speak, and including especially the women. I mean, I dated a woman and she admitted to me, I mean, in high school, there was like one black kid in her high school, and she flat out told me I was determined to make him my boyfriend. Because why? In the end, she had to admit, when we had a discussion about it, She felt sorry for him. That was it. She felt sorry for him. Women are like that, okay? That's why we must, as you and I have discussed, Richard, and I may make people, women in the audience, angry, but that's why we white men must govern our women. In every sense of the word, govern, the root of the word, meaning to control, you know, the mind, but also to rule. Because if we don't, this is exactly what the Jews have taken advantage of, by ruining the minds of white women and making them feel sorry for minorities. And she actually had an affair with a black guy later on. I think she was, she told me she was like 19 or something. And then she was at a dance and she was talking to the guy's cousin. The guy got wind of it, and just like a lot of these Negroes do, right, because they're maniacs, super jealous with rage, he went over and he tore up her front lawn with his car, okay? And it happened to be the parents were gone for the weekend. When they came home, the neighbors informed him that, yeah, some black guy tore up the lawn with his car, and he found out that his daughter had been dating the cousin. And so he kicked her out of the house. He kicked her out of the house. I forget how long she was gone for. But she was already, like I said, 18 or 19. And when she told me this story, I said, good. That's a righteous white man there. And she sort of laughed, and I don't know how offended she was. She didn't really let me know that she was that offended. But, you know, she tried initially in our relationship to take me to task for my views. But the bottom line is, in the end, she was, and probably still is, sympathetic to these blacks and these other dark-skinned minorities. Her sister married a guy from Brazil, and this was a guy, a very, very dark-skinned mestizo, and they had mixed kids, and to be honest, it was disgusting. And she actually, in a moment of honesty, she told me that her parents were not very happy about it, but that's just the way it is. And this is the kind of thing that's occurring. One other quick thing, and then we can play this clip. I had a client one time, a nice old woman. Her husband had gone, and I worked for her for many years, and one time I went inside of her house for some reason or another, and I saw all these pictures on the wall. And it turns out they had five daughters. Five daughters, and she was German. She had a Germanic last name from her husband. Her husband was German, too. And almost all the daughters were blonde, blue eyes. One was brown hair, blue eyes. And they were fairly decent looking. They weren't all beauties, but they were all attractive white women. Out of the five daughters, three married non-whites. And because the reason I saw the photos on the wall from the wedding and other, a couple of them were black and another was some version of non-white. And I remember looking at this woman and I said to her, I said, well, how did your husband, what did he think about that? And she just goes, not much. And see, this is sad. This is a sad state of our culture. And it's been, like I said, deliberately drilled into so many people's brains. And I was never subjected to it because I was pretty much immune to it. I was born, I came out of the womb. I was already doing the Roman salute. So, okay.
And I renamed this clip. This was, it's only about 2 minutes, and it was originally Jared Taylor reporting on about four or five incidents, recent incidents.
Right. Play it.
All right. Well, this is, I called it Black Brutality, but this is actually narrated by RBN's own Robert Ravolt, because he covered this. This is from his broadcast July 24th. If you would, please, Mike.
For example, this hijacking in New Orleans this spring, a 17-year-old boy with a pistol along with three girls, one 16, the other's 15, stole a car with the owner in it. She got stuck in her seatbelt and was hanging out the driver's side door when they roared away. Her arm was ripped off and she bled to death. The carjackers were black. The victim, a 73-year-old grandmother, Linda Fricky, was white. I covered that. In Philadelphia, not even a month ago, two boys and two girls between the ages of 15 and 17, all of them black, attacked and robbed this white father of a four-year-old. They kept beating him long after he was unconscious. His brain bled so much part of his skull had to be removed. He has memory loss, needs speech therapy, and his wife wonders what kind of father he can ever be to their boy. Just a few days ago in Philadelphia, seven black children, the youngest was 10, beat a 73-year-old man to death with a traffic cone, and he was black. The girl you see beating him is 14 years old. They didn't rob him. They seem to have killed him just for the fun of it. One danced a little jig. Why were they out at 2:30 in the morning? The victim was a black man named James Lambert. 31-year-old Lucretia Isaac got into a fight with 41-year-old LaShoon Rogers. Lucretia was getting the worst of it and handed a bag to her 10-year-old. The daughter rummaged through the bag, pulled out a gun, and shot LaShoon twice, killing her. You shouldn't have messed with my mother, the girl shouted. Early this month in St. Paul, when police went to serve a warrant on a murder suspect, a toddler cursed them, attacked them, and I'm sure y'all seen it, the little kid out in his underwear. This little fellow called a black officer a bitch and told him to shut the F up and hit him several times. He also complained about the officer's ugly-ass shoes, while a man in the background called the black officer a deep-fried Oreo head. There were no parents in sight. What's remarkable about all these recent cases is how young the children were. And there were plenty more like them. And it goes on and on and on about all this just black brutality.
All right. And so, yeah, Paul, your commentary on just those examples.
Okay, so, yeah, as you know, I can have the tendency to rant, and I'll make it quick because I'm anxious to get to any callers if we got. I'm sure there's a lot of them itching to pull their trigger. But here's what a lot of white people need to get into their heads, and a lot of them don't realize it yet. And I wish we were reaching a larger audience. But the average white person has no idea of the savage, criminal, brutal nature of most ghetto blacks because they don't interact with them. They don't experience them. They don't live near them. It's a problem, okay? It's a problem. And other blacks will testify to this if they had to live through it, okay? And I've had a couple that have told me about their childhood, okay? So, again, we need to rule, all right? We can't have Jews forcing blacks upon us. That is their wet dream. That's why you see so many black mayors and black police chiefs and so forth and Jewish or black prosecutors, because the Jewish wet dream is to have blacks and other non-whites rule over us. That's a fact. And it's not just a wet dream. They are putting it into practice. So that's my initial reaction.
And I haven't covered it on the air because it's a long article, but National Vanguard talking, it started with a women's soccer team, a girls' soccer team in the UK, complains that it's too white. And what you hear from the blacks, the quote-unquote British blacks, who just talk about what really boils down to, they will never be happy until it's them in power, in positions. It's not about being equal or seeing equal numbers out there. And it's great how the article breaks things down. I may read it at some point, but I don't know if you want to comment on, you know, this general tendency, because it's like, you know, you give an inch, they take a mile. But this is by design, of course, of the international Jew agendas upon these non-white proxy armies, I call it.
I think it's normal, natural, and indeed likely innate that every group wants to be predominant. Now, that's a little different than the word dominant, but in other words, you want to be mostly around your own group. You feel most comfortable around your own kind. This can be visually observed in schools, in society in general, and of course, it really comes out in prison. Okay, everybody tends to cohere to their own group, their own kind, and they want to be predominant because nobody likes the idea of being dominated by another race. That's normal and natural. So we, whites, need to embrace that again. We once had it. And if we ever want to have any hope of reclaiming territories that were once historically ours, that needs to be embraced and embraced in spades. I'm not shy about it. I've met many, many other whites that are not shy about it, some to varying degrees or another, but it has to be a very strong sentiment, because only strong sentiments can lead to the sorts of action that we're going to have to take. Otherwise, we're going to be overrun and pushed around and pushed out and maybe into isolated pockets. And that's, again, the exact Jewish goal and strategy.
I don't know if everyone's just too busy at work today at the start of the month here on a Tuesday, or if everyone's just too intimidated, or they assume the phones were perhaps too overloaded. But I don't know. Who wants to step up and have a comment or question for Paul in California? We haven't had any callers on yet, but we have open lines, clear
okay.
lines. So we'll see.
Okay. I know most other shows we've done, we normally have at least a couple of callers or more in waiting.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, you must intimidate them, Paul.
either that or maybe even turn them off. I don't know. But from some of the callers in the past, I don't think that would be the case.
And the name of that National Vanguard article I highly recommend is English Soccer and What Others Cannot See. And I'd also point out there they recently had a nice Parts 1 and 2 article, which is just a reprint of Dr. William Luther Pierce, Thoughts on Recruiting. And I guess this is just, you know, in a general sense, something that should be active. I mean, racial realism is a term I mentioned earlier in the show, but getting more people just aware of how we are already under attack in a war, really. And that's not to mean that you're not friends with blacks who see it and see the problems, like the friends you mentioned, Paul.
Right. Well, you'll hear the theme over and over, and I've seen it in interviews and on videos and, of course, in real life, experiences about, well, you know, I don't have any problems, or I get along with my neighbor fine, and so on and so forth. And that's not what we're talking about. It's the numbers, the overwhelming ratio that's going to count in the end, because there's just no doubt about it historically when you look around that when you get a certain percentage of blacks in a country or a given area, it's a disaster. And if I'm not mistaken, from what I looked at or heard before, I believe it's 30% or more. Once an area starts to go 30% or above in terms of blacks, then after that, it's basically an unstoppable force and only goes one direction. And that's basically decay and destruction. And
at the very
Detroit is just, yeah.
But having
go ahead.
Mixed areas always gives a scapegoat to blame. You know, the white man is what the international Jewish cabal always uses. You know, puts in the heads of these blacks, these disenfranchised blacks, when their societies go downward. If they're isolated to their own, South Africa is an example that went downhill pretty far with them in control. I don't know if you'd call them in control. I'd say they were still kosher controllers in there. But I've had that Indian economist on who justifies the caste system in India, even an Indian man. He says, yeah, among the skin color variations, you do see a difference as far as high trust societies, crime level, the ability to have freedoms is what it comes down to, honestly.
Well, you know, it's funny when you said skin color. It's just one of those things that we could call it a coincidence or, a happy genetic accident. But the lightness of skin color corresponds to IQ. I mean, this is just not even debatable. I mean, whites and Asians have the lightest skin, and we have the highest collective IQs. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And obviously, it's not a causal factor, okay? There's just correlation without causation. But, you know, blacks and browns, as a rule, are at least one standard deviation or more below whites and Asians. And, of course, you can see the result of this. And it was very well detailed in a book called IQ and the Wealth of Nations. You don't have to read the whole book, but if you just look up that book, IQ and the Wealth of Nations, it goes over the very well-known data and research that shows that the higher collective IQ any country or society has, then the higher overall the civilization and the wealth. And it's just observation. You know, nobody's going to think of Switzerland or Norway or Austria or any of these countries as poor countries with crumbling infrastructure. No, these are advanced countries where the high per capita income and standard of living is high. It's always, always, always these darker skinned people that have the most problem either building or maintaining a certain level of civilization. And it's well known that blacks destroy what it is. This can be seen in so many different videos I've watched, as well as articles of what the blacks either let go in terms of maintenance or completely destroyed what whites had built in many African countries, including Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, and even South Africa. Now, what's interesting about South Africa is I recently watched a nearly one-hour interview on Jared Taylor's American Renaissance, which is quite an excellent channel. The American Renaissance videos are posted on other platforms. But Jared Taylor interviewed a South African man, and he's talking about a little bit of what he calls a turnaround or resurgence in South Africa, because a lot of blacks there, especially the better blacks, are coming to realize that whites are the way to go. And so, let's face it, and even in this country, there's obviously going to be more optimally performing blacks, more law and order blacks, maybe more conservative blacks that realize that we need to have a certain standard of behavior and a certain standard of, shall we say, law enforcement in this country, in society, to have a livable society. Because when you just let everything go, well, that's what happens. Everything goes. And, in fact, you can see it now with, you know, all the homeless encampments everywhere here around my area in L.A. and other cities on the West Coast, that the new policy is hands off pretty much, or let's help the homeless, let's facilitate them, let's dedicate resources. And so you just get more of it. Whatever you allow, you get more of. So, you know, if you're allowing crime, you're going to get more crime. If you're allowing the kind of homelessness where people can just pitch a tarp, they choose it as a lifestyle, and they just pitch a tarp wherever they want, well, then that's what you're going to get more of. And you can see it out here. It's really mind-boggling. If you saw, say, before, like, say, 20, 30 years ago, and now, which I've had the fortune for about a 40-plus year spectrum of living in this area, and you can clearly see what has occurred, and it's all going downhill fast.
And I got a message. We had a couple people try to call in, I guess. You know, I got some private messages from a couple people I know. So maybe, I don't know if there are phone issues or with the station. You know, maybe there was a cyber attack, a kosher cyber attack, Paul. can't be sure there.
Wow. we would be so honored.
Indeed. We're making a difference, I guess, an impact that's considered a threat, so that's progress. You say you want to reach more people out there, but people reshare a lot, and but there are a lot of different approaches people take. You know, some to the written word, you know, with articles, and then a lot of people stick to the video sites. You've been getting me again lately more into checking out videos, and there is a value to that. I like radio a lot, but I've been doing radio since, 2016, and I just tend to listen to a lot of other hosts and I'm doing that so many hours. But you have a good eye for selecting video clips with good impact.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that is heartening or encouraging is the comments that I've noticed over the years. So I already started to notice back in 2014, 15 in that area. Going into 2016, the overwhelming majority of comments that I was seeing on Yahoo News articles as well as YouTube were what you would call more awake, aware, or woke comments, but the good type of woke. And in fact, Yahoo News articles now don't have a comment section. They used to. And I remember there was a particular story many, many years ago, and it had a certain racial bent to it. And, you know, there was literally like, you know, 2,000, 3,000 comments, you know, pretty quickly. And I started reading, and I probably read the first, I don't know, 50 to 75 comments. And almost every one was like, you know, pro-white and you know, with racial undertones, favorable to what the article was communicating. And I even still see it on YouTube. A lot of times I will notice that after a day or two, they'll take comments down. But many, many YouTube videos, you'll see they get just a barrage of what I would call nationalistic and or pro-white comments, so and or also Jew-aware comments. So I think the tide is turning everywhere on all platforms of the what I call the awakening to the Jewish problem.
Looks like we have some callers now. Wires sorted out. William Repillum, we have. And he's a Thursday host with Jeremy from Kentucky on In Plain Sight Thursday nights, and that's 9 Central. Welcome, William.
Oh, you racist, bigot, white supremacist. You guys are doing a great job, man. I really am digging this show. I really appreciate how you've shown all the evidence of all the ridiculous, disgusting and lying racism against us that the Jew has been re-opting onto us for the crimes the Jew has committed. I'm so tired of trying to tell people about the Jews, and they're just completely oblivious to it. I tried to tell somebody about it the other day, and she said, I'm going to be sick. I got to go over here and get sick. I'm going to go over to my area and go throw up now. And, you know, it's like I didn't know what that meant. She was sick by what I was saying or just sick by what they're doing. But it's just so hard to get it through to people. That, and you know, what's really disgusting is these black people that that will take on the will get on TV and take on this anti-white agenda of the Jew and own it. It's just like a slave. You know, I mean, it's an act of slavery. So my take on this is that black folks that, you know, should, you know, the reasonable-minded people, anybody, should take this and we should be able to have discussions with them about it. There was that guy who had David Duke on his show a few years ago. I forgot his name. I wish I remembered his name. He's a super based black guy. And I bet you that we could have this discussion with him. That, I think that would be super, like, a great conversation to have, you know?
I agree. Yeah, we have a couple other callers suddenly. Let's try to get
a
minute with
each real
thank you.
Just real fast, I want to respond to William really quick. You ready?
Yeah.
Hey, William, you're a white male. You're a white male. What are you now? You're a white male.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Yes, sir. We have Stephen Douglas Whitener. Mr. Whitener, who actually has a show right after Farron Saturday mornings now, and that's 10 p.m. Central Saturdays, 10 a.m. Central Saturdays. Stephen, what did you want to add, sir? Glad you called.
Oh, great show, guys. Hello, everybody. It's like, well, I had been thinking that I was going to read this tomorrow, but you were quoting Mr. Revolt, and he read this article in Identity Dixie on his show Sunday. It's like, what are we going to do about this, right? Okay. What are we going to do? We all agree about the problem, right? And it says, he says, America, the USA, I think the article of this, the title of this article is The United States is Dead, Walk Away, Dixie. And then he goes on to list things that can be done, a list of, 9 things, I think. But the one that, number 9, maybe it's 10, but number 9, where he says, engage in ethno-nepotism. Stop buying from stores where the staff is black. Stop hiring Mexicans to do your yard work. Now is the time to act like them. Blacks only hire fellow blacks, Mexicans fellow Mexicans, Indians fellow Indians, etc. We need to start doing the same. Your dry cleaner should be Southern. Well, no, this is the local.
Southern Dixie point of view. We had Bob in Utah.
Anyway, Bob, that's what I was going to add, fellas. Great show.
Thank you. Bob in Utah. I'm sorry. Hey, did you have something you wanted to add quickly, sir?
Yeah, I sent you that email. I thought we should call Paul, possibly Paul the Impaler.
I like it.
I don't know if you got that. Last thing, everyone needs to bookmark National Vanguard. That's the reality that Paul is expressing, and Paul from New Jersey expresses the same sentiments. That's the reality. It comes from Dr. Pierce, and so everybody bookmark National Vanguard and go there every day and read
Thank
a little
you, Bob.
Something.
And also National Alliance as well. Thank you, folks. Please support RBN. Transcend the constructs. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Ease-Off.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.